Coming up on Tech News Today, eBay buys more customers for PayPal. Some U.S. senators are fighting back against the NSA. And Netflix type service is just for the kids. But is it any good? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, September 26th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 20% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT9. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products and smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zucker.
And I'm Jason Owl.
And this is the show. We try to take the most important stories in the tech world, put them in some context for you, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. eBay has agreed to buy online payments company Braintree for approximately $800 million. Braintree's customers include Airbnb, OpenTable, GitHub, and Uber, among others. Braintree also owns Venmo. It's a direct competitor with eBay's PayPal. PayPal product chief Hill Ferguson told All Things D that Braintree will continue to operate as a separate brand after the acquisition, but it's too early to tell how Venmo will fit in at eBay.
T-Mobile will stop carrying BlackBerry smartphones in its stores and instead ship the devices directly, according to David Carey, executive vice president for corporate services. This is a few days after BlackBerry said it would no longer market to consumers because of weakening smartphone sales. Carey also said that, quote, keeping stock in the retail distribution system was inefficient because BlackBerry phones have not been high in demand as devices for consumers.
Some users of Google Talk and Google Hangouts are reporting that Google has been sending their chat messages to the wrong recipients. According to some Twitter users, some of these chat messages are ending up in the email of the wrong people as well as Google Talk. Google says it's identified the problem, stopped it from recurring, and is currently working on a fix.
A new study from Pew Research Center found that 15% of U.S. adults do not use the internet, and they like it that way. Of those who do not, 34% indicated it just was not relevant to them. Another 32% said it was too hard to use, and 19% said it's just too darned expensive, or something like that. Only 7% said it just wasn't available to them. 92% of those who do not use the internet say they don't have any interest in starting to use the internet, although 44% of those asked others to look something up on the internet for them.
Twitter's rolling out a new feature that will let agencies broadcast messages in a crisis. Twitter Alerts will now let users sign up for emergency messages from agencies like FEMA, the World Health Organization, and local police departments. Once you opt into Alerts, it'll send you push notifications and text messages in case of emergency, much like severe weather warnings from the National Weather Service sent to smartphones now. When you open your Twitter feed, those alerts will also be highlighted in your stream.
A new U.S. bill backed by Senators Ron Wyden and Rand Paul calls for intelligence reform after reports of U.S. government surveillance came to light thanks to Edward Snowden. The bill is called the Intelligence Oversight and Surveillance Reform Act and would stop the NSA from collecting phone records in bulk from Americans. Should the bill become a law, it would also require a constitutional advocate to be introduced to the foreign intelligence surveillance courts to argue against the government.
Control-Alt-Delete is such a part of our culture that I even have a set of cups that are in the form of those keys. But Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates says he wishes it weren't so, and he blames IBM, darn it. At a Harvard fundraiser, Gates told the audience, "It was a mistake. We could have had a single button, but the guy who did the IBM keyboard design didn't want to give us our single button." Engineer David Bradley, who worked on the original IBM PC, gets the credit for inventing the three-key salute, as people call it. But he said previously that Bill Gates deserves the credit for making it popular.
According to a teardown analysis from IHS, a top-of-the-line 64-gigabyte iPhone 5S, which retails unlocked for $849, I should know, costs Apple just $218 to build, including manufacturing costs. So the build for the 16-gigabyte iPhone 5S is just $20 less, but Apple charges consumers another $200 for that extra 48 gigabytes of storage. It's probably bound to rile up a few people. The display assembly is the most expensive component. That's $41. But what about the sensors? That includes the compass, accelerometer, and that fancy new fingerprint reader. Only costs Apple $15.
If you buy an unlocked Samsung Galaxy Note 3, it may not come as unlocked as you thought it would. David Meyer at GigaOM reports that unlocked Note 3s sold in North America and Europe will only be unlocked for those particular regions in which they're sold. So in other words, if you take your unlocked European Note 3 to Canada and try to use a Canadian SIM card, it won't work. British online retailer Clove posted this fact on its blog, and Meyer confirmed it with Samsung's German PR folks. Samsung Switzerland is saying the opposite on Facebook, but Meyer points out this contradicts what it says on the Note 3 box itself.
Chinese officials told people.com.cn that the China pilot free trade zone in Shanghai will be under management measures consistent with the rest of the country. The statement contradicts a report earlier this week that said the free trade zone would allow access to sites like Facebook and Twitter. If you forgot about what the free trade zone is, it allows for goods to be imported, processed, and re-exported without having to be declared to customs authorities.
This episode of Text News Today, Text News. We're just going to talk about text stuff. None of this video crap.
Words are awesome.
Tech News Today, however, is brought to you by Squarespace, where not only can you post up text, but you can post up photos, you can post up videos. You know how much we like Squarespace. I use it all the time. But we want to know what you're doing. It's the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. So if you have a Squarespace site, send us a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website and use that hashtag TwitSquarespace, and we'll all take a look. We can all look at this hashtag. We might even choose your Squarespace site to mention in a future episode of Tech News Today. Some of the reasons why you'll love Squarespace, they're constantly improving their platform. It always adding new features, new designs that make things better, not new features that don't. That's the, you know, I've done services like that. Squarespace adds a feature, you know it's good. Beautiful designs. They have more than 20 new beautiful templates on top of all the great ones that they had before. It lets you start with all the style options you need. Create a unique website for you or your business. And it's mobile ready. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website. So your content will look great on every device, every time. Search engine optimized too, by the way. This ensures that your site's content can be crawled by not just Google, but Yahoo and Bing and a bunch of other search engines out there. It's important. You want every piece of traffic you can get. And hosting's included. Squarespace takes care of the hosting. You don't have to worry about that. Start a trial right now with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT9 to get 20% off and show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. They've been a great supporter of the show. One of the reasons we're still around. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Joining us now to gather around the round table and discuss some stories of the day, happy to have Lloyd Case, freelance writer and analyst at improbableinsights.com. You'll find his work all over the internet. You've been doing some stuff with Tested, you were saying, Norman Will and those guys over there.
Yep, it's been a lot of fun working with those guys.
Good to have you, Lloyd. Let's start off talking about this eBay acquisition, Sarah.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with Braintree, it was founded in 2007, and it automates online payments for retail merchants and online merchants. So it'll give you, as a merchant, an account, a payment gateway. It'll handle reoccurring billing, credit card storage, support for mobile and international payments. And they've got some great clients. As you mentioned, Tom, there's companies that you've heard of, Airbnb, Fab, Uber, GitHub, all using Braintree, and they pull in quite a bit of money, $12 billion in payments annually. $4 billion of that is mobile. But what is interesting, I think, and probably it's sort of what's behind the fact that they sold for $800 million in cash, is that Braintree also operates Venmo, which is a direct PayPal competitor. And really, at least in my friend group, I mean, Venmo is our go-to. When somebody picks up the check, everybody Venmos that person $20. It's the easiest solution via mobile I've seen to date. And I know that eBay, obviously owner of PayPal, understands that as well. Venmo is that peer-to-peer payment solution. Braintree actually acquired Venmo last year for about $26.2 million. So it has been in its portfolio not really that long. eBay said in a statement today that Venmo will help to contribute to PayPal's mobile payments capabilities. Sort of remains to be seen. It does that, yeah, I mean, sure, it'll be an independent brand for now. At what point does it kind of all turn into one thing? Lloyd, I don't know how much experience you have with the mobile payment structures, if you're a Venmo guy or a PayPal guy or neither. But do you think that this was inevitable?
Very interesting. I've used PayPal mobile myself quite a bit. But what's interesting about this is it kind of puts them also right against Square, I think. And, you know, I buy a lot of stuff at street fairs and conventions and things like that. And people have these little dongles attached to their mobile phones that they accept payments on. And it's either Square or PayPal. And it's really interesting. My experience has been they always have more problems using the PayPal system than Square when they run the credit cards through. So maybe this is a good move for PayPal.
I think the one of the interesting things about this is you've got two big wins for PayPal here. I mean, eBay is obviously buying this for PayPal, and I sort of suspect that eBay is looking at PayPal as its future, essentially.
Yeah.
But Braintree is going to help PayPal with that checkout process. Right now, if you use PayPal to pay, you always have to go throw over to PayPal and log in with your PayPal ID, and it takes you out of the experience of the site. Braintree, right, you probably never realized you were using. So that's going to help PayPal smooth out that. But I think you're right, Sarah, about Venmo. Venmo Touch was a project that they've been working on that would let users enter their credit card information into Venmo, and then it would populate in other apps. Now, some people like me might be scared about having it, you know, hacked or something like that. But the ease of that is helped if all of a sudden to an app maker, they say, well, how many people are using Venmo? It's not that popular yet. If you all of a sudden have 140 million PayPal users that are instantly part of Venmo with their credit card information available, that becomes a really compelling thing where I don't have to keep entering my credit card stuff all the time because I'm a PayPal user or a Venmo user.
Exactly. Well, and for merchants, I mean, the Uber service gets my credit card transaction multiple times a day, sometimes when I'm feeling particularly lazy. But it's like PayPal, no one at PayPal has to convince anyone at Uber to change systems. Mm-hmm. They simply now own the company that Uber's using, and you know, you just kind of throw money at the problem, and there you have a solution.
We've talked a lot about different online and mobile payment systems out there. It seems like there's so many companies out there. Consolidation was like imminent with PayPal or eBay buying Braintree. It seems like Braintree's clientele, like you were mentioning, Uber, and then who else is in there? It's Airbnb, Fab, Living Social, all of these companies becoming eBay, PayPal customers. That becomes something interesting because now you have, without having to negotiate with these companies, like you're saying, Sarah, they now have some very, very big customers when it comes to all these payments.
I think the other issue I think is going to be interesting from the perspective of those customers, the Airbnbs of the world, is what the customer service experience is going to continue to be like. If it's, I suspect one of the reasons they liked Braintree was because of the customer service, and PayPal is not exactly famous for that. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, that's another big plus for PayPal. Agreed. A new bill we mentioned in the news fuse is being proposed called the Intelligence Oversight and Surveillance Reform Act. It amends sections of FISA. Let me run through a little more about what this bill is going to do. It's proposed by Senators Ron Wyden of Oregon, Mark Udall of Colorado, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, and Rand Paul of Kentucky. It'll amend Titles 4 and 5 of FISA to prohibit bulk collection of phone records and email records. It will amend the famous Section 7-2 to close backdoor search loopholes, prohibit searches that are just about a target rather than searches for messages to or from a target. It will strengthen reverse target prohibition, where they actually target someone because they know they're talking to someone in the U.S. and allows them to kind of backdoor into getting U.S. records that way. It strengthens statutory limits on unlawfully collected info and how they can be used in court cases. As we mentioned, it appoints a constitutional advocate to provide an adversarial relationship in the FISA court cases. It declassifies significant FISA court opinions, allows U.S. citizens to openly challenge the constitutionality of such surveillance and sue for damages, allows companies to disclose more information. It has no proposed protections for non-citizens. For those of you not U.S. citizens in the audience, this isn't going to do a thing for your privacy. It is expected to be addressed today at the Senate Intelligence Committee public hearing. If this were passed, and that's a question, whether this can even make it to a vote and get passed. But Lloyd, would this make you feel better about your privacy on the net?
To some extent, as a U.S. citizen, of course. As you said, it doesn't do anything for non-citizens, including people with green cards and stuff that live in the U.S. But I still think it's an important thing. And I think one of the things that it will do also is make people overseas more comfortable with continuing to use U.S. services like Gmail and Facebook and things like that, knowing that there'll be some strength to this. On the other hand, because as you know, I think saw a statistic recently that the top 8 internet online providers are American, but 80% of their customers are overseas, and that's really going to hurt them in the long run if bills like this don't pass.
Yeah, I was looking at that PDF of the bill. At least it discusses the changes that would be in there. And the idea of trying to increase transparency seems like just a smart move, because we found out how much of this stuff is going on in secret. The idea, if you had a constitutional advocate that was actually arguing against the side of the government, because it's usually a one-sided discussion and the courts hardly seem to be ruling against the government, to have a transparent and adversarial relationship, it seems like, with these courts, it might put to rest a lot of people's fears about all the stuff happening in secret, although I don't know how often they'll basically avail themselves of this public information, but at least it would be public should this actually become a law.
Right. Just the spotlight of public knowledge will help a lot, I think.
A lot of people in the chat room, and I'm sure a lot of you out there listening, will react to this and say, it's spin. It's just them trying to CYA. I feel like that argument is a slippery slope that leads you to say it doesn't matter what the Congress would do. I'm not going to believe anything. And that's not very helpful. These are guys in the Senate who have a history of opposing the status quo. I think you'll see this fought very hard, because I don't think this is just spin. But does it actually go far enough? I mean, great. We have an adversarial constitutional advocate in the FISA court, but there's still no oversight of that person from the public. We still won't know. I mean, yes, they allow for more declassification of some cases. They allow for U.S. citizens to finally sue if they, you know, you couldn't even fight this before. These are all positive steps. Is it enough, though? That's I'm not sure. And I don't even want to criticize it until it actually gets to a vote and it actually becomes law, because I think this has got just enough teeth to not pass at all. This will get the entrenched interest to squash it. But I think these are good baby steps, and I'm not even sure we can get baby steps out of this.
It seems like, depending on how you feel about government surveillance up to this point, this is the sort of thing that could be written in a clever way so that there are loopholes that just maybe haven't come to light yet. Or you say, this is just the way that it goes. This is the natural progression of the rights of the American people. I don't know what side of the fence I'm on, really. I guess it just, it depends on does something like this pass or not.
I think the question, Tom, that you brought up probably will be brought up in the endless revisions to this bill, because this is the first version of it. It's just been introduced now. I'm imagining there's going to be the public commenting period, all kinds of things that are probably going to alter this. Who knows what's going to be added to this bill as it moves through the process, because it could turn into something completely different, like, you know, defend the children somehow, and then that'll kill right. It, you know? So at this first stage, I'm hoping these questions will be raised as it moves along the process, but it's still very early, but it's interesting to see that somebody's saying something about transparency, and it's from the Congress.
I think it's interesting to note, just one last point, that we don't have the text of the bill yet. And I don't know if that's on purpose, or if they're just not ready, or they didn't want to give their opponents a chance to prepare defenses. All they have is a summary of what it would do, not the exact language. Let's talk about this Pew Internet and American Life Project study. Who's not online? 15% of American adults ages 18 and older do not use the internet or email. Now, we always have people are like, well, wait a minute, how did they get this information? Pew Internet does a great job of conducting valid surveys. They surveyed 2,252 adults, 18 and over, on April 17th in English and in Spanish, and their margin of error is 2.3%. So this is a fairly good, well-conducted study. These numbers are probably fairly accurate. I think I don't know about you guys, the interesting thing to me is that 92% of the people who are offline just aren't interested in getting online. And you may say, well, they're all old. Of those aged 65 and older, only 44% had no internet. So the majority of those 65 and older do have internet. It's not, it is the majority of those that don't have the internet are over 65, but it is spread at least somewhat across the spectrum.
I think, I mean, well, if they're elderly or, I don't know, over the age of 65 or whatever, I mean, they're probably some retirement communities and you've got a computer room and there's certainly internet access, but I mean, ask my well, recently deceased grandma. But I mean, the last 10 years of her life, the whole time, you know, I'd be trying to show her something on the internet. And it's just like, all it did was make her mad. She was just that thing at it. You know, it's like she had a really weird reaction. She's like, zero things in my life need this box. And I don't care what's going on in there. It just didn't make sense. So I don't think just access is enough for some people who are like, you know, I've gotten this far without it. And I just don't feel like changing anything now.
Yeah, I can tell you what prompted my dad to become a heavier internet user was when he couldn't get local baseball anymore. So he signed up for MLB.com and, you know, is watching baseball online. And that's prompted him to do other stuff on the net. So I think that they need to find a practical reason to use the internet, particularly the older generation.
Yeah, I think, Lord, you're right. It's practicality. If you've got systems that work for you, why would you bother to change it? I know the early days of internet, when I was trying it out, there doesn't seem to be like, oh, I really need to do this. I enjoyed looking at GeoCities and making my own websites and things, but they weren't like, I mean, online shopping was just starting and things like that was just at the beginning. So if you've had like a phone system, a catalog system or something that you're used to, why would you ever change that? If it's relevant to your life and you're like, oh, I can bank online or take photos that way, that seems to be driving a lot of us to go, what did you do before? How did you go to the bank to actually deposit a check? That's crazy. How'd you find a hotel? You had a directory. That isn't how.
I saw somebody in the checkout line at the grocery store, Petaluma Market, right across the street, writing a check for her groceries. And I mean, I had to just like keep my mouth shut. So I was like, well, she's slowing everybody down.
You do see that reasonably, you know, a lot of times here, right?
Yeah. But, you know, it was one of those things where I was like, wow, I just kind of forgot that that's what everybody did for a really long time.
41% of people with no high school diploma are among those without internet. That's probably not a surprise. 24% income under $30,000, also not a surprise because you can't afford it. But 14% of those who are offline were urban, 14% were suburban, 20% of those who are offline were rural. Now, I would expect that number to be bigger in the rural areas. Obviously, the rural internet connectivity we all know is an issue, but it isn't as great, as much larger the other percentages as I thought it would be. That doesn't mean that they shouldn't stop trying, but it means those rural people, man, they're cagey. They're good at finding the internet. Trust me, I know. My sister lives in a rural area. She's able to get it. You can too. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Gazelle. If you need a little money for your internet, actually, you probably didn't buy a gadget in the first place if that's the case, but you can still get more cash by selling your old gadgets on Gazelle. That new iPhone is here, and Gazelle.com wants to buy your used iPhone. For a limited time, Gazelle is allowing you to lock in today's pricing for your iPhone while giving you an extra few days till October 31st to send it in. Today, right now, is September 26th. Normally, if you go to Gazelle and you lock in a price for anything you're selling, you can lock it in for a month, so that would be October 26th. But they're giving you 5 extra days right now. Gazelle is allowing you to lock in today's pricing for your iPhone until October 31st. That means you'll have time to get that new iPhone before you send them your old one. Gazelle makes selling your used gadgets fast and simple. You just go to Gazelle.com, tell the Gazelle the condition. Be honest, they'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads, and they're going to look at it when they get it anyway. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and free shipping, and then you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or Amazon gift card, and then get an extra 5%. When you get the Amazon gift card, Gazelle has paid $100 million to over 600,000 customers, including myself. I've done it. It's easy. Free shipping, fast processing. Go to gazelle.com now. Get an offer for your iPhone. Lock in today's price and send it in by October 31st. Do it now because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. That's very likely. We thank gazelle.com for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Netflix, tablets, often seen as something that helps keep the kids occupied, but sometimes that's risky behavior, and one company wants to help you with that, IS.
Yeah, there's a new streaming service for kids called Hopster. Now, it's going to launch an iOS app that provides kids shows as well as interactive games. It's going to cost $8 to $10 a month. It's going to launch in November, and it's going to launch in the UK. Now, Hopster is run by Nick Walters, who's a former Viacom executive who helped launch the kids channel, a bunch of kids' channels for Viacom in Europe. Now, the service will have more than 800 episodes of Babar, Paddington Bear, and Super Y, which is my favorite.
Babar.
You like Babar? Yeah. Super Y is, I think, far more interesting because I've had to watch it recently.
Okay.
Lloyd, do you think this is how we're finally going to get something like a la carte cable with focused streaming services like this? This is for kids, but how long before we get like a drama streaming and then like a reality streaming service and things like that?
I mean, apps. I see all kinds of vertical apps popping up. Why not streaming vertical apps? I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. you know, speaking as someone who back in the dark ages handed my two daughters Game Boys in the backseat of the car when we go on long drives, I can totally see this working for certain kinds of families. Because it's much easier to manage. You just hand them the thing and launch the app, and you don't have to worry about switching DVDs or any of that kind of crap when you're driving. So I think this is an interesting idea. I hope it succeeds.
I think this is going to be amazing for all of the friends I know who are parents are always talking about their strategies. Either they say, you know what, I don't let them use YouTube because I just don't know what they're going to end up finding. Or they say, well, I like to let them use it, but it does make me nervous and I have to keep an eye on it. So something like this, I think there's a clear need for.
Yeah. The question is, one thing I would love to see in a service like this is a la carte pricing, because I think $8 to $10, a fixed monthly fee may be too much for some families who don't want to use it all the time. But if they could somehow have an occasional user pricing as well, that'd be, I think, a real win.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, too. The only thing that's a little odd about this is, let's say, you know, you've got a Netflix subscription, and then something like this is great for kids. Well, then you're sort of like, well, do you have both of them for kids? Or then do you just sort of get by with all of the programming that's available on Netflix for kids? Of which I hear, anyway, from parents, there's quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Netflix is concerned, if you have that, I don't see why you would get this. Unless the games and kind of the playground aspect of keeping it, you know, friendly, the entire experience for children, and it's easy and everything. Netflix has so much to offer to kids. What they don't offer right now that they need to, that would kind of blow this entirely out of the water, is to bring their Netflix for Kids interface into the mobile devices, so that you do feel comfortable just handing the device to the kid and saying, all right, get lost in there. We're cool with that. And I think they've kind of started doing something along those lines by introducing the profiles and getting those working, because now you can create a profile for your kid and, you know, hopefully all they see are those things that are perfect for them. But $8 to $10 seems like a lot when you think about, I mean, we don't know exactly how much they will offer as far as like number of shows and all that kind of stuff. But I have to imagine the sheer volume of offerings through this versus something like Netflix is going to be a lot lower. And that just seems like a steep price to me.
I just think I'm seeing the parallels between Netflix being almost like the traditional cable package where you get everything, absolutely everything. So there might be a kid's experience. You can have parental controls and do that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. kind of like you could with your cable service. But this idea that they could swivel search out into like horror by accident, it could be some other issues. But that's why I'm like, if Netflix becomes like the old cable dominant, you know, this old everything at once, and then these other companies are going, wait a second, we could break these out and have a specific service. Because, I mean, NFL, MLB, they all have these packages. NFL, not so much, but MLB and NHL, you can do sports packages. I'm just curious, when are we going to see just another company just go, wait a second, we can do other verticals?
We're the horror package.
Yeah, right.
Well, Netflix must be feeling complimented these days because everybody's targeting them. Everybody wants a little piece of them. Even Target, apparently, wants a piece of Netflix.
Yeah, there's a video on demand service. It's brand new from Target called Target Ticket. And it's been in beta for a while. It's now live to everybody. Has over 30,000 movies, more than 50 episodes of next day television. You don't have a sign-up fee and you don't have a monthly subscription. So this is probably more, you can liken it to, you know, an Amazon or an iTunes on-demand video service. Although, as far as the library goes, it's like Netflix. They have a nice rollout. You got Android apps, iOS, PC version, Mac version, Xbox 360, Roku app will be bundled into availability on certain Samsung TVs that are smart TVs, Blu-ray players, all available at launch. So Target says, we're pretty much everywhere. What's also nice, and I think will appeal to the family aspect of this whole thing, is you've got individual profiles for family members. This is, again, a lot like Netflix. They've also partnered with a nonprofit called Common Sense Media. And the point of that is to display thousands of reviews from other people that help parents find age-appropriate content. Parents can filter by violence or profanity or the Motion Picture Association of America rating, TV parental guidelines. So there should be a lot of choice for parents who say, I really want to make sure that my kids aren't watching anything that's inappropriate. If you're a red card holder at Target already, you'll automatically receive 5% off each video purchase. And just because they want everybody to try out the service, you get 10 free downloads from a pool of movies that they've pre-selected every new user. Now, until recently, I didn't really have a lot of experience with Target. There was really no Target in San Francisco. I've never really been to one until City Target.
What?
I know.
Really?
I know.
I'm sorry, I'm shocked.
Target was just not one. It was very inconvenient for me to go to one, so I never did. There's now a City Target right down the street from my house. It's the first one in San Francisco. I mean, it's a family center. I had no idea Target. But, you know, you buy groceries and toys and clothes
and
furniture and electronics. It's an all-in-one. I'm in there all the time. But, I mean, so are all the families. So I think, really.
Welcome,
I mean,
Sarah. Welcome.
Yeah, no, I can't stop. Shoes. They sell shoes. But it really is, you know, it's an all-in-one stop for families. And I wonder, yeah, you could say, well, Walmart does stuff like this as well. But does Target somehow have a family-friendly branding that, let's say, somebody like Netflix just doesn't have a retail presence? Lloyd, what do you think?
Well, I'm kind of curious. Do you know if Target grew this on their own or if they're licensing somebody else's stuff? I mean, I sort of see this as similar to what Walmart's doing with Vudu.
Well, it is an internal service. So I'm not sure if an outside company built their infrastructure, but it's not. Right. It's not just a partnership. It's actually something within the Target brand itself. Right.
And I think the fact that they're really targeting this at families, including the whole Common Sense Media partnership, differentiates them a little from things like the Walmart Vudu experience, which is pretty straightforward, you know, streaming video. So I think this is where they're going to probably push hard in terms of trying to get people to watch their stuff.
Apparently, it's powered by Rovi Entertainment Store. That's the company that's going to do in the back end for the Target thing. But Sarah's right. It's totally internally, you know, branded and presented. But according to Variety, when's this story from? They're selling the Rovi Entertainment Store. So that could be a problem for Target Ticket. This is only a week old story. It's a little story behind the story there.
Well, unless they built something that then Target is now selling the Rovi store?
No, Rovi is selling off the division that built this system for Target.
Are they selling it to Target?
No, I don't think so. Well, I don't know. Target might get in there and buy it.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, it's that. Yeah. I don't see the point of building something with a company that then all of a sudden ceases to exist. I don't know. I mean, again, as far as the family stuff, these aren't really features that I'm using on a regular basis, but I have to assume, especially if you're a parent who's like, more and more, my kids are watching stuff on the internet and I don't know these shows and it's not traditional cable. Being able to filter by all of profanity or, you know, inappropriate content and that sort of thing has just got to be a win for parents who think, okay, we're going to get into the video on demand thing in our home for the first time.
When I was looking at the service this morning, they're running this promotion. If you sign up, you get 10 free ultraviolet movies because some of the things you do when you buy some of these movies, they are available in ultraviolet, which means you can access them on Flixster or you can access them on Vudu or different things if you go to your main ultraviolet library. And if you already have ultraviolet movies, you can import all that stuff into this one location, which I think was a smart move. But one of the weirder things about Target's catalog I've noticed, not every movie they offer is in the ultraviolet version. So you might get stuff that's locked to the Target Ticket brand versus being able to access somewhere else. So you would need the Target Ticket apps. So it's an interesting mix by using ultraviolet and their own style of their own DRM if this will take off. Because if you have two different things, you might start wondering, why doesn't it work everywhere unless I'm using the Target Ticket app?
Just real quickly, I didn't read far enough down in the Variety store. Rovi Entertainment Store was sold because it was losing money to an entity called Reliance Majestic Studios that is in Beverly Hills, and nobody seems to know a whole lot about them. So I think the complication here is not that it was sold, but that the new owners, we don't know if they have a plan for turning around Rovi. I think that's a side story there. I think Target being able to get in there and make an online streaming store, though, is really, really a positive and a good thing for Target to try to do because brick and mortar is not going away, but that's going to be less of a revenue. And they need to find another way to sell retail to their target audience. No pun. Well, okay, pun intended. I didn't stop it.
Yeah. Particularly if you've ever walked into Target, you know, they have a huge section of DVDs, right? I mean, it's rivals a lot of other places I've seen. And I'm sure that revenue is starting to decline over time as more people are streaming stuff. So this is another way to sort of prop that up.
Let's finish up with an ode to this little guy, my Microsoft Surface RT tablet. He's the last of his breed, Iaz.
Well,
apparently.
He's got a sister.
Yeah,
he's
got a, two.
The
right.
two, but did they drop the RT part? So even in name, it's not the same. So Dell's Windows RT-based tablet, the XPS 10, is now listed as unavailable after a price cut brought the ARM tablet down to about $300. Now, Dell told PC World it's going to refresh its tablet lineup in October, but people are thinking that Dell's going to use Intel's Bay Trail processor for an upcoming 8-inch Windows 8.1 tablet. So the only company left making Windows RT tablets is Microsoft. So Samsung left the game. Asus is not bringing it over. Lenovo said no. Dell seems to have left Windows RT. HTC apparently had plans and scrapped a Windows RT tablet. Nokia might introduce one with the Lumia 2520. That's been rumored for a while. Mary Jo Foley at ZDNet and Windows Weekly says that Microsoft's working on a new Surface Mini. It's around a 7-to-8-inch device that's going to launch early next year that would be ARM-based. And Mary Jo Foley is saying that Microsoft still believes ARM offers better price points and battery life possibilities, and it allows the company to field an OS with less/no crapware, viruses, and piracy because of how locked down the operating system is. Lloyd, does Windows RT even have any future if only Microsoft and then the Microsoft-owned Nokia is the only people, only companies making tablets with this operating system?
I don't think so. I mean, they had a fire sale to get rid of the old ones, right? I mean,
yes.
So I think this is a sort of a stopgap measure. I think it's I'm talking about the Surface Mini. Long term, I mean, they're going to have to look back at x86 because Bay Trail is actually a very nice solution for this kind of space. And ARM is good for things like Android, and certainly the ARM architecture is built into the iPads. But with people pulling away from RT, particularly big Microsoft OEMs, I would say that Microsoft will see the writing on the wall. I think after the Mini, it's kind of gone.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Lloyd, because when I try to follow the trail of what would make me consider an ARM-based Windows tablet, the problem always is, well, it can't do as much as Windows 8, right? It doesn't have the full desktop. I'd almost recommend that Microsoft just take away the desktop in an RT tablet, call it Windows Tablet Edition, and really say, okay, this is really meant to be head-to-head with Android, and a Mini makes sense because it's a 7-inch form factor and it's low-powered and you can have a lower price. But even then, I just don't think that's a market Microsoft can make a lot of headway in.
Right, and in terms of the people that sell apps on both Microsoft stores, whether it's Windows 8, x86, or RT, having to support two different apps that are have different, you know, build two different apps for different targets is kind of a pain. So I think that going to back to x86 might be a good move.
Lloyd, do you think this is just simply a branding thing? If this was Xbox Surface or something like that, where you know that these applications won't run on this tablet, but it's meant to be a companion device, would that make it a better sell to people? Because it seems like there's been confusion from the very beginning when there's an ARM-based version of Windows and a regular version of Windows.
Right.
Is it just branding?
No, I think it's a lot more than that. I mean, why would I build anything for even an Xbox tablet unless it actually ran Xbox games? I mean, you get the same kind of confusion in branding. It'll just cross over to the entertainment side instead of the business side. So I think Microsoft's strategy is really kind of, we're throwing everything at the wall and see what sticks, but I don't think it's going to work with this one.
Yeah, I think this goal of saying we would like a universal app store and interface across all of the devices is noble, but I just don't think it's achievable right now. And I'm not saying Microsoft should stop, because maybe in 10 years they will have achieved it. But the problem with RT is that it's just a device nobody wants except for that Microsoft purpose of saying, but then we can have Windows on ARM, and some of those apps can work on x86, and there's just not a demand for that right now. So let's move on to the randomizer, shall we? You know, we do a straw poll with our live audience most days here at Tech News Today. And today we had three. I changed it up. Instead of making you vote, I let you do multiple choice. You can choose as many as you want. And here's what happened. 22% of you voted for peering into the Large Hadron Collider, Google Street View arriving at CERN. 25% voted for EasyJet threatening not to let a passenger board after he criticized the airline on Twitter. But 53% of the votes went to first computer made of carbon nanotubes unveiled. And this is a big step forward. Carbon nanotubes seen as a successor to silicon, but they don't behave like silicon. They go every which way when you lay them out. So trying to overcome those impediments has been a holy grail. And some engineers at Stanford University have figured out a couple ways to do that. One is an algorithm that just sort of avoids any of the nanotubes that aren't properly aligned. And another one gets rid of an imperfection called metallic CNTs. These are carbon nanotubes that actually carry an electric current no matter what you do. You can't turn them on and off, which you can't really operate an and or switch if you can't turn it on and off. And so what they did was they were able to turn off everything in the nanotubes and burn out anything that was still conducting electricity. So it just got rid of the ones that were bad. And the upshot of all of this is that you now have a very slow, mind you, but functional computer with carbon nanotubes. Yay!
Well, baby steps, right? I mean, the thing is, they have to shrink this thing a lot. It's kind of big right now, the chip itself.
Well, maybe it's just large enough to be a very, very oversized smartwatch that can last all day. That's what I'm hoping for. That seems about right. That's like a Galaxy Gear 2 waiting to happen.
Yeah, this is a down the road. So now that they've proved they can actually make a chip with a carbon nanotube, we have to see if they can make it, you know, manufacture it with economically and make it faster. And they think they can. They're like, that's the easy part. Getting it to work at all is the hard part. So this could lead to a future of carbon nanotube processors. Who knows? Down the road.
Cool
stuff. Sarah, you're so enthusiastic. I'm so happy.
I don't hate the idea. I'm just like, well, it's nanotubes.
Yeah.
But it's not nano
one
yet.
One day. We'll look back at this and be like, right. This was amazing.
That's right.
There is exactly. Like, show me the CNTs in my
show
phone.
Me less.
Let's
show me small.
Let's thank our, remember, it's not the nano part. This isn't going to make smaller devices necessarily. It's the faster devices. Thank our sponsor, ProXPN. You can be more secure when you're out there. Your online freedom and privacy is almost a cliche now to say that surfing the internet is fraught with peril in online privacy. Governments, ISPs, everybody wants a piece of your action. But don't forget, even with these big threats looming over you, it's the little threats that are probably more likely to bite you. You go to that free Wi-Fi hotspot and somebody's sniffing packets and gets your Facebook password. Don't let that happen. Use a VPN. It's one way that you can protect yourself. ProXPN is a global VPN that I use. It works with almost any internet connection. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel through which all your online data passes back and forth. Any online application can work with ProXPN, your web browser, your email, your file sharing, your instant message programs. ProXPN keeps everything you do hidden from prying eyes, disguises your physical location, gives you unfettered access to any website or online service, no matter where you live or travel to. Now, some of you may say, well, wait a minute, what kind of encryption tunnel? Well, it's a 512-bit encryption tunnel. Okay, Tom, but can it work on Linux? Yes, it can, because it's OpenVPN or PPTP. You choose. You can configure it yourself. They have software for Windows and Mac that give you more controls than just configuring it yourself. It also works with iOS and Android, but there's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. Plus, they have world-class customer support. And even Steve Gibson from Security Now gave it a great review. And that guy does not give a great review unless he really believes in something. So go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT and you'll receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel. Within 7 days, get a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Hey, Sarah.
Hey,
there's
Tom.
Things on your calendar.
Right you are. Hey, BlackBerry quarterly earnings report call was scheduled to be tomorrow, but they're not going to do that because things are a little in flux over at BlackBerry. So we'll just hold tight. Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 tablet has gotten a release date for the U.S. That will be October 10th. It's the 2014 edition. And Nokia says six new devices are coming to its October 22nd event. Six. Woo-hoo. Six.
Six on the 22nd.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Six. Just stop. That's what Nokia has for. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got a message from Paul. It says, hey, TNT crew, having upgraded to iOS 7 and just listened to the latest security now, I disabled Siri from the lock screen, which I never use anyway, and also the control panel to prevent an attacker from putting my phone into airplane mode and me not being able to find it. Apart from losing quick access to the flashlight, calculator, and Wi-Fi, this would be fine if it wasn't for the fact I now have no quick way to control podcasts. It's fine if I'm listening to something. I can double tap the home button and select pause. But if the podcast or music has been paused for more than about a minute, there's no way to restart it without unlocking the phone. I work in IT, and I'm well aware about the trade-off between security and convenience, which is why I was prepared to lose access to the other features and control center from the lock screen. But I need to be able to get quick access to the podcast controls when traveling to work and listen to announcements, pause while going through tunnels. Apple has left me with the choice of being able to use my phone the way I used to be able to, or making it secure.
You know, I haven't tried this, but I wonder if using the headphones would still allow you to pause and unpause with the little clip, you know, the little button in the headphone clip.
Well, I
that's
quite
not the perfect solution.
I look forward to the jailbreak that allows this to work the way we want it to work.
Oh, I'm sure jailbreak already allows it to work. That I'm looking forward to the actual bug fix from Apple, too.
Yes, that will happen eventually.
Yeah, eventually. Well, that eventually is the end of our show. Thank you all for joining us. Thank you, Lloyd Case, for joining us. Improbableinsights.com is the place to go if you want to keep up with what Lloyd's doing. But you've got lots of other stuff going on. You want to tell folks about anything in particular?
I've been writing a lot of stuff for Tested.com. We just recently built a PC, a hardcore gaming PC for them, including video if people want to go see how to build one. Doing stuff on board games, not just tech stuff as well. And it's been real fun working with Will Smith and Norm Chan over there.
Yeah, those are good folks. Good stuff. I actually, thanks to Will Smith, got to use Google Glass for the first time. He was the person I happened to be nearest, closest to them getting released. So good stuff. Check that out, tested.com. Also, check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can let us know what kind of stories you would like us to discuss on the show. It's one of the things we look at. I did a video a couple weeks back where I showed the process I go through before the show, and you'll see how we use the subreddit to help determine the stories of the day. So go in, get in there, do some voting, up or down, either one, or even submit some stories, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv, and you can give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. I believe Len Peralta will be here tomorrow to illustrate our show. We'll see you then.